Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Change. There must be something wild within.
You've been sleeping all day. How do you feel?
I feel good. It is Mexican Independence Day.
Welcome to Rewatchability. It's the podcast where we...
Oh, no. Rob, what are you doing?
We're a podcast on the Entertainment One Podcast Network. I'm Robert LaRone.
Oh, my God.
With me, as always, is...
Blaine Waters. That got hairy for a second.
Well, it was a bit hairy to begin with.
You got claws and everything just for like that 1 second.
You know, like, you have a bad week, your hygiene slips... What can I say? Today we're here to talk about a very special movie in the spirit of the season, which is Halloween. You may have noticed that there's more spooky things about. Last week we talked about vampires. Mm-hmm. This week we might have another supernatural creature. But first, I want to thank our Patreons. Those are the folks who give us the spirit by donating a little bit of money each month, and that helps us keep the podcast going.
Keeps our jack-o'-lanterns lit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in return, you get a couple of things in return.
Yeah.
Like a curse.
Or a trick or a treat.
Yeah.
But the treat is mainly the podcast early and sometimes bonus content.
And the podcast is ad-free when you are a Patreon, so...
Yeah, you just have to give like $3 a month and you get it ad-free and early.
So do that, or else you will turn into a dark creature.
I wonder where the curse was going to come up. That's good. That's good.
Okay, so we're talking about Wolf this week, and it is a 1994... horror romance starring Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, as well as some other people.
James Spader. Oh, God, yeah. He is so sexy.
No, he scares me.
Oh, okay.
He's a creepy guy.
There you go.
But, Blaine, when was the first time that you saw this movie?
Rob, I didn't want to bring it up. I didn't want to break to you. You know, in the spirit of Halloween, I wanted to keep things fun and upbeat, but I've never seen this movie. I've seen the poster. I remember going into the 99 cent video place near my store and near my house. It was a store near my house. And I remember seeing the poster there and being like kind of entranced by it. Like,
right.
It's weird.
Look into my eyes.
Yeah. And it's just like half wolf, half like Jack Nicholson's on the poster. Mm-hmm. And it's very mysterious.
Right.
And it looked a little spooky.
So what you're saying is you were scared.
I was too scared to go down that road.
Yeah.
No, I was a kid. And so I didn't ever rent it. And I think it was advertised a little bit as like a romance, and so I think I wasn't really into that.
No.
When my mom and I were like renting videos.
Still not, much to your wife's chagrin.
Yeah. What, marriage is a transaction. Okay. So I don't think we ever rented it But I was always kind of intrigued.
Right.
So I wanted to watch it. I was glad you brought it up to watch it. But you did bring it up to watch it. Why, Rob? Is there something in your past that...
Something in my blood, which flows.
Yeah, that time of the month. No, sorry, the moon. The moon.
Well.
Werewolves and periods, they're so similar.
I also remember being intrigued by this movie when it first came out. Because this was... It came out in 1994, so, you know, I was very young. I was just sort of getting into movies. Jack Nicholson had already made a huge impression on me as a certain little character called Joker.
Oh, yeah.
The Joker. Mm-hmm. They called him back at the time. There wasn't like 80 guys who played him at the time.
Right. It wasn't just Joker either, like Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah. So I liked Jack Nicholson. He was like the first actor that I was like, oh, this is what an actor does. He plays different parts. He does his like weird little smile.
He yells a lot.
He yells a lot. And so I was like, this is a movie that I'm going to want to see.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that we rented it at one point, but I think that I quickly found that it was too adult for me.
Mm.
You know, it had too much adultness in it.
There was a lot of adults in it.
Adulting.
I don't think there's one kid.
There's no children.
No.
So it didn't really appeal to me at the time. But, you know, when I was thinking about movies for Halloween, mm-hmm. we've talked a lot about many of the franchises that people about in Halloween. Last week we did an interview with a vampire. So I was like, what about this movie?
Yeah. Fuck vampires. You know, screw vampires. Let's talk about werewolves.
That's where the action is.
you transform. That's great.
Yeah. But also, I mean, there's a lot looking at this movie that makes it attractive. Like Jack Nicholson, great actor. Michelle Pfeiffer, also great. It's directed by the great Mike Nichols.
Mm. Yeah, for all intents, like everything that's put into this pot is beautiful and amazing and sublime. So combined, it should make one of the best movies ever made.
Absolutely. So that's what we have to prove to you today.
I might be on the other side of that.
Okay, all right. Don't turn too quickly, Blaine.
So how does this movie fucking begin, Rob?
Well, it starts with a snowy road. It's winter somewhere in America.
And this is a horror movie, so you have to have the main character driving a car down a country road, and they're going to hit something. That's how every horror movie starts. The Invitation, Get Out. I mean, that's the end of the list that I have
in
my head.
I assume that's what happens when you drive places. Aren't you always hitting things and causing horror movies?
My car is always in the shop. Yep.
Where, squirrel?
So,
interview with the raccoon pyre.
Raccoon pyre sounds like a raccoon that plays baseball.
But yes,
you're out.
He is driving down this lonely, cold road, and he hits a wolf. It just runs out in the middle of the road, and he hits it. He comes to a stop. He's checking on the thing. Is it alive? Is it dead? He pokes it with a stick.
Right. I mean, that's just add insult to injury right there.
And he's pretty sure it's dead, so he gets ready to drag it across the road so he can continue on his way. But its eye opens, and it bites him.
And then it runs into the woods like it was pretending to be dead all along just so it could bite him.
Classic wolf trick. Wolves are known for playing dead, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't approach a wolf even if I hit it with the car. I don't know, maybe the blanket, get a blanket so it wouldn't bite you. There's things to think
you sound
through.
Like you have experience.
I have. Have you ever hit anything in a car?
I hit a kitten once.
No, Rob. You didn't.
I'm the monster!
Did you actually hit a kitten?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, it was like one of those.
What the hell?
I wasn't doing it on purpose. It was one of those situations where, like, something runs out into the middle of the road, like this movie.
Right.
But also, there were vehicles.
But it's like, unlike this movie, it's like the cutest thing in the fucking world. So there was other vehicles involved? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make you feel bad about this.
It's too late, Blaine.
I hit something one night really late in the car, like 4 a.m. I was driving home
from
somewhere.
It was a senior citizen.
They were late in their lives is what I meant to say. No, I hit something, but then I couldn't find it. so it must have run off. But I could never. I was like, I don't know what it was.
And now you've been getting mysteriously thinner.
There's this person been like this yellow rain slicker jacket. They've been following me around. It's been weird.
Yeah. Well, it's not a great start for Jack Nicholson.
No.
But there's more to his life than just running down wolves. He has a very important job. He is the editor-in-chief at this publishing house. Great job, but things are a little bit troubled because they're being sold to this big billionaire guy, and it seems like everybody's job is in peril. Like, all his people that he works with, they're like, if they fire you, then we're going out with you.
Yeah, it's like a very Jerry Maguire-esque thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And David Hyde Pierce is there.
Yeah, and Miles.
Yeah, I can't see him as anything but Frasier's brother.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a weird setup for a movie. I feel like they put things into a hat and like, what's a supernatural characteristic? It's like an improv game. Like when I was in high school, we'd like do improv. And
well,
like,
Mike Nichols did come from the precursor of the Second City. So,
right? Nichols, you know? It's like you reach into the hat, you bring out two things. And this is like supernatural thing. Werewolf. Occupation, book publisher, and then you like make a fucking movie on it? Like, I don't know where the concept is in this movie. What's
that's
the
not
concept?
How you write scripts.
Well, like, what's how did this movie get sold?
It is true that they did bounce the occupation of the character around a few times. He was originally a lawyer, and then they made it.
I had no idea about how this movie got made, but I knew that happened. Who picks up?
That's
book
like
publisher?
A supernatural sense that you have. What's that bite mark on your arm?
Nothing. Nothing. I hit a kitten. Okay. I'm sorry that you hit a kitten. That's awful.
It was pretty awful.
Yeah, that's a horrible thing.
Also, I'm pretty
through.
Sure everyone just turned off the podcast when they heard that. They were like, fuck you guys.
See,
canceled.
This is how we turn into a true crime podcast. We talk about the kitten that got hit
but
by the car.
Who really hit the kitten?
I think society did.
Or Blaine.
What? Why would you pin that on me?
Well,
don't you pin that on me.
But so the situation, the new regime of the publishing house is going to be announced at this big party that the new owner is throwing. So basically everybody has to go to the party and find out whether they have their jobs. And it seems like a happening party. Young Allison Janney's there.
Yeah. Just for like a second she's
I know,
there.
And she's so good.
She's the best part of this movie and she's in it for like 1 second.
She's very committed to having like one line and dancing lankily.
Yeah. She's awesome.
She is great. But here, Will, the Jack Nicholson character, finds out from his boss, Mr. Alden, played by the great Christopher Plummer.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome. Canadian?
No. That he's not losing his job. He is losing his job. But he's not being fired.
Right.
He is just being demoted. He's going to be the publisher of Eastern European something or other. It's not a real job.
I mean,
there's obviously no Eastern Europe.
And no famous authors have come from either. It's just like it boggles my mind because it seems like kind of a step up. It's like, oh, you can retire to Eastern Europe where your money will go so much farther. You can take your wife there away from maybe things that she's getting involved in here. And you can live a happier life. And he goes, that's a shit choice you've made me. It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not stellar there. But his friend, the guy James Spader.
So-called friend.
Who has been beneath him.
His protege.
For a long time. Yeah, his mentee has said, well, fuck that. You know, I'm going to leave with you if you want me to leave. And I didn't even know that I was going to be promoted to your position until he told me at this party.
Yeah.
And
I mean, James Spader, he's at his James Spaderiest.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Yes.
This is like he's very conniving. He's very manipulative. He's laying down all the tracks for what he would become, Robert California.
And we see kind of how duplicity he is in Will's wife's reaction to him. She hates him.
Yeah.
She's like, that guy, like you built him up and he's trying to tear you down. Like, fuck that guy. And I loved her for it.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah.
But that's not the only problem that Jack Nicholson is having, because he's also noticed some hair growth on his palms.
Turns
out Grandma was right.
The dead relatives were watching. I love that his first reaction to that isn't to go, okay, I'm going to the doctor. He goes, I'm just going to snip it off. I'm going to snip off the long hair that's growing from my wound.
Yeah.
It's growing from his wound. Anytime I've been bitten, hair hasn't grown from my wound.
That's and very how weird. Many times have you been bitten?
I've been bitten, you know, a few times.
Okay.
Don't look into it, Rob.
I can start. I mean, I like the scene where he's like, you know, trimming it with the scissors because it seems like a very like older man thing to do.
Right.
And this is a movie about an older man. Like, this is not Jack Nicholson in his prime. This is Jack Nicholson, I think, when he's really starting to show his age. Because he's, like, a little bit stocky. He wears all these, like, loose and frumpy clothes.
Yeah, his hair is thinning. They kind of put some more salt and pepper in
his hair is very Jack Nicholson-y.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
But more so.
And he has, like, really low energy. He doesn't really, like, pursue anything like with his wife at all.
He's not sure whether he's in Wolf or About Schmidt at the beginning.
Right, yeah. And he's definitely in About Schmidt. And so...
But now that he's been bitten by this wolf, things start, like, changing. It's not just the hair. We all grow a little bit of hair. But he starts having a more sensitive sense of smell and of hearing. Like, he smells that Stuart was in his office when he comes to work that day.
Right, because Stuart had like a swig of, you know, tequila in
his
coffee.
That's a different guy.
Oh, that's a different guy. Okay.
It's just because he smells. But another guy, he's passing him in the hallway, and he's like, a little early for tequila, isn't it?
Right.
And then later, he's out in the lobby, and he hears the guy in his office with the door closed making a phone call complaining that he gave him shit for having a drop of tequila.
Yeah.
With his coffee. And then he goes up to him later and says, don't give me that shit. You didn't have any coffee.
Vijav Alazeus wrote Something Wild, 1948, old but breathing.
He's not some kind of mystic out of the jungle, is he?
No. He has a string of letters after his name. In fact, he's Dr. Alazeus.
All right. Thank you. Can you give his number to Mary, please?
All right.
And Gary?
Yeah.
Don't tell people that you had a drop of tequila with your coffee this morning. You didn't have coffee this morning.
This guy is like screaming for help with his alcoholism, and all Will is doing is just berating him. This
Don't
is
fuck
the
with
90s.
Me, man. I'm a wolf.
I mean, we're making a big meal out of it, but the movie does. The movie spends like 20 minutes allowing him to like overhear conversations.
It's very,
It's
slow. It's,
well, it kind of paves the way for all the Marvel movies, all the superhero movies, all that stuff to come because it is showing a person getting their powers.
That's interesting because there was a Den of Geek article that I found that, you know, postulated the same thing, that this is essentially a superhero movie, an origin story for this character of Wolf.
I think he needs a better superhero name than Wolf.
Well, he's working on it. Wolf Boy, taken.
It could be Mr. Wolf.
Mr. Wolf?
Yeah.
Virginia Wolf?
Oh, that'd be great. To the lighthouse! That's where his, like, lair is.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
So now that he started to, like, get this vitality back, he started to get his mojo back, and he's not going to put up with this sniveling little Stuart taking his job and fucking with him. So he gets his guys together, David Hyde Pierce, his secretary, and he gets them to call all the authors that they have, that he has, and be like, we're all going to leave and start a new publishing company, and I'm just going to go and tell Christopher Plummer this, and then he'll have to give me the job back or fuck him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he kind of like brings that to Christopher Plummer. Christopher Plummer is like, I mean, you're showing some backbone. I like this new guy. This is the guy that I want working for me. This is great. So he kind of is like, I'm not going to agree until the like ink is dry. So like, let's do this. Give me the contract.
Yeah.
And then he goes home and he makes love to his wife.
Yeah. He's so like, you know, he's gotten it all back. He doesn't need any blue pills.
I mean, that's what I was thinking this entire movie watching it was just like, it is an allegory for the older man finding Viagra because – not only does he, like, get more energy at work and, like, makes love to his wife, but he starts having this other relationship, but we haven't gone there yet, but we will. But, like, he and starts getting more energy and starts, right, like, pushing guys around. It's like
Midlife Crisis, the movie.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I can still get my dick hard. Get out of my way. You know, he's like hitting people with it.
Can you imagine, like, one of those, like, early 2000s Viagra commercials where they couldn't tell you what it is or what it did?
Right.
And it's just like Jack Nicholson doing his things, running around like a werewolf.
There's a whole scene.
See a doctor if it lasts for more than 4 hours.
Hey, doctor, I've been a wolf for a full day. Can you help me out? But what Jack Nicholson does, there's a moment where he's like in the mirror and he sees his hair is growing in thicker and he's like, I'm the president of the hair club for men. You know? And he really is changing into this younger man through the blue pill kind of thing.
Yes, yes. Yeah, but it doesn't help him right away because, I mean, he has a lot of competition.
He does.
Because he's been turning into a werewolf and, like, going out. We've already seen it happen
like,
once.
It sounds like there's a group for him or something. Hey, guys, my name is Will. I've been turning into a werewolf.
It's been 15 years since I contracted lycanthropy.
I've been able to keep it in check, but this last full moon, I saw a deer. And
yeah. Well, basically the day after he's, like, gotten his vitality back and, like, made love to his wife for the first time in a long time, he, in the middle of the night, he starts, you know, tossing and turning, and then he gets, like, Wolverine sideburns.
Yeah. I was like, Hugh Jackman's on screen. What's happening?
And then he starts, like, running like the wolf in his sort of weird way, and it's sort of hilarious just to watch Jack Nicholson run through the various times in this movie, because Jack Nicholson does not seem like a guy who runs.
There's this run that Jim Carrey does in The Cable Guy when he's like the evil Jim Carrey.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what Jack Nicholson does in this movie. He like hunches over and like runs with his claws and is like, rrr, rrr. Like it's just the craziest acting. It reminded me a little bit of Tom Cruise in
Angry Vampire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where he's like acting kind of animalistic, but not fully animalistic. Like
right.
He's still like,
like
I got
grunting and
yeah,
like, prominent eyebrow.
I'm still a man, you know. I still have control over this role. I'm not acting like a dog, which would be beneath me as an actor. So he still has that going on.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
I also love the way that he leaps. So there's a lot of like leaping Jack Nicholson in this movie, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, he has like the cables attached at his hips.
He's like, woo! And his pants like are, you know, big. They flutter in the wind.
It's like MC Hammer attacking people.
Like
what
Hammer.
The hell?
Hammer time.
Yeah, and he goes.
He goes to Stewart's.
Yeah, he goes to Stewart's.
And he rings the thing, and Stewart comes down, and Stewart's like, oh, what can I do for you, Will?
Yeah.
And he bites him. And then he goes dog leaping up the stairs, which is hilarious.
This guy, you imagine opening a door to someone, you're like, oh, I am having an affair with this man's wife. He showed up the door, and then suddenly he just bites you and leaps up the stairs like a dog. You'd be like, he's lost it.
I've earned that. I deserve it.
Don't sleep
with a man's wife unless you expect to be bitten, possibly to have your floor shat on.
That would have been amazing if you just like... Just like walked away from the wife after confronting her, and then just pulled down his pants with like. But he does find his wife in Stewart's apartment.
Yeah,
the wife has been cheating on him.
Yeah,
so she doth protest too much with the whole Stewart shouldn't be mean to you thing.
Yeah,
she's being mean to Will.
Never trust anybody that your significant other hates.
Oh, my God.
That's what this movie taught me.
That's actually kind of a good rule, but also the scariest rule.
Scariest rule. Just live by it for 1 year, see what happens.
Oh, God.
But, yeah, I mean, I like the way that this stuff happens in the movie because, like, we see Jack Nicholson acting. We don't know why he's doing the things that he's doing, and then it's sort of revealed. It's his wife up there. He must have smelled it.
Yeah.
It's very...
Smelled her.
Yeah.
Smelled
him on her.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So...
Yeah. But we should say that, don't worry, this guy isn't going to be alone for long because we've already met Michelle Pfeiffer, and she's the daughter of Christopher Plummer.
That's right. They had like a moment at the party where after speaking to Alden, he has basically a panic attack. Yeah. I should also mention that horses don't seem to like him. That's weird. But they have like not a moment. You know, they have decidedly not a moment. And he says like, you know, don't worry. I'm safe. I'm married.
Right.
Or something like
yeah,
that.
That's,
and she's like, that doesn't mean shit.
Well, that's kind of what a guy says to you before he makes a move. I'm pretty sure that's like the older man's repertoire.
Yeah.
Of like, don't worry, I'm married. You can sit on my – it's like, come on, man. I don't know. Like, I felt like this was a little – also, to see her, she kind of is this rebellious girl.
Yeah, like rebellious – heiress.
Yeah.
You know, she's done a lot of drugs and stuff. She's had some relationships her daddy doesn't approve of.
And daddy is the thing. Like, I'm not sure how old she's supposed to be. Like, Michelle Pfeiffer was in her 20s at this point. And so, like, I'm not sure if they're playing her young. It's just a little weird because she does kind of have a character, but there's not a lot of talking about her at all.
He just fired you, didn't he?
Demoted, I think, is the word. I've been offered a choice between no job and a job no one would want.
So what will you do?
I'll probably take the job no one would want. I'm gonna have the courage to be jobless at my age.
Old guy, huh?
Yeah. Old guy.
Yeah, I mean, I like what Michelle Pfeiffer does yeah. in this role. And I think yeah. that, like, it resists a few of the tropes that were present at the time. Like, it's not – she doesn't instantly – she doesn't like him or anything at all. Like, she's
no.
not even really attracted to him. They just sort of keep spending time together because – she's damaged and he's damaged.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there is that kind of rom-com trope of them not liking each other and then liking each other.
Yeah. And when they finally do end up hooking up, it's like it's way down the line after he's already tore the throat out of a deer on her property. And once you do that, I mean, really, it opens up the relationship to anything.
Yeah. I mean, you can talk about lots after that. You know?
Yeah.
But I find that though she is a good actress in this and she does well with the material she's given, she's not given a lot of material. And it seems as though she falls for him really quick, from hating him to loving him
yeah.
in like a couple days. Not maybe a couple days, but definitely a couple scenes. to the point where at the end of this movie, when everything is going south, he tells her, like, I love you more than anyone in my entire life. And life makes, like, has meaning because of you.
Yeah.
And she, you know, says the same. Now, he's older. If she's younger, then maybe she can fall for someone really quick and, like, you know, being younger, you know. But, like, him being older, of, like, 20 years.
I feel like that's exactly the midlife crisis.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. Oh, man, you made everything make sense. I was with this old broad before. Now you're a sexy young woman.
Right, yeah. Oh, it is Midlife Crisis, the movie.
Yeah.
To a T. Yeah, so I get what you're saying there. I get what you're saying. He does go to a zoo at one point to kill a bunch of animals in the zoo.
Yeah, but he's almost arrested by Ross from Friends.
David Schwimmer's in this for no reason.
No, it's because he is an actor.
Yeah, but he's in it for 1 minute, and he plays the only funny role in the entire movie.
Yeah.
And his only line...
Isn't it
funny? Well, I know. What is his line? It's like...
He took my handcuffs.
Yeah, that's the only joke in this movie.
I like that he says that line with the same inflection that he says every line in Friends.
Yeah. Yeah, he goes like, you know, he took my handcuffs. I guess we're on a break. He just does the whole thing. Yeah, he's in it for a second. It was nice. I was like looking down at some notes I was making, and then I looked up and I heard David Schwimmer's voice, and I was like, that can't be. It can't be. And it was. It was kind of delightful to see him in a role that's not Ross, to be honest.
Yeah.
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 To be reminded that he is an actor.
I think there's also some other people in this movie who we haven't talked about yet, like Richard Jenkins.
Yeah.
The great Richard Jenkins is one of the detectives.
So he kind of escapes from the cuffs. He has the handcuffs. He does handcuff himself to his heater in his room.
Yeah.
And lets Michelle Pfeiffer in. And Richard Jenkins is kind of like in and around the same area in the movie, too, trying to track down who killed his wife.
Yeah. Well, that's right. His wife gets murdered while Jack Nicholson. And I think it's the time when he's handcuffed himself up and then Michelle Pfeiffer comes and unhandcuffs him and they have some sex.
Yeah.
And then he's like tossing and turning in the middle of the night, happens to all of us. And then the next morning, cop shows up and says someone's been killed.
Right. So he could have done it. He doesn't know.
I mean, they're playing it like he probably did it.
Yes.
And at first, like, Michelle Pfeiffer is protecting him because she has a lot of experience with cops. So she's like, he doesn't have to answer your questions. He doesn't have to answer without a lawyer. And he doesn't really know what to do because he's in shock.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, after – I think it's after she finds out – she speaks to Richard Jenkins and he tells her that there was canine DNA in the wounds that she starts to suspect because he's told her that he's been turning into a wolf.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good sign that maybe he did it.
And this was actually kind of a nice turn in the movie for them to be, like, broken up that way, for her to be like, oh, fuck, he's a murderer. He probably killed his wife.
Mm.
What we don't know is at the same time, Stuart has been turning into a wolf as well.
Yeah, that's right. He's borrowed Jack Nicholson's yellow contact lenses. And he forgot to brush his hair.
There's a great scene where Jack Nicholson does sign the paperwork and he gets his old job back.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes into the washroom and it's, you know, chest high urinals. And
yeah. And he tells Stuart that, hey, I got your job.
I got your job. And he's like, well, you know, I guess that's good. And I still have your wife, but that's fine. And maybe we can work together still. And Stuart's like, you're fired. And then he turns around while he's peeing and pisses all over Stuart's legs.
Give me a few months. Let me say I quit. Now, it wouldn't be best for the firm. You vindictive son of a bitch. The best thing for the firm is me. I'm the best thing this firm has, and you fucking know it. This is fucking ridiculous. Are you crazy? No. I'm just marking my territory. And you got in the way.
I love that scene.
That's such a good scene.
I remember my my friend's dad like worked at Alcan, like a processing plant, and he would tell stories about people in the plant like trying to pee on each other's legs while they were like doing the
what?
Yeah, it was like it's called tag, and you just try to like sneak your anyway. It was a very weird thing that they used to do, and it reminded me of this movie because I was like so shocked to begin with, and then I was like I'm not as shocked as like. Ariane is, who's watching it. She's like, that's crazy. Like, who would pee on someone else?
And well, I was
like,
women don't have that power.
Yeah, no. We have directional aim.
And that's right.
It is a power that we should
privilege.
Use more often.
Male privilege.
Yeah, there you go.
It's called like it is.
Yeah, except no one seems to have aim when you go to, like, a bar bathroom. Jesus Christ.
Wow. It's not that easy.
Let's get it together, guys. Lift up the seat and
yeah,
then
but
go.
Sometimes you get the double stream. Let's not talk about this right now.
When the full moon is out.
Well, so the big final confrontation comes down at the mansion when Michelle Pfeiffer realizes that James Spader was the person who killed Jack's wife. And now he's going to go after Jack. So he runs after her. Now, he's locked in the stable.
Yeah, Jack Nicholson is. Yeah.
Yeah. With like really high bars. And Stuart, who is becoming a werewolf, is attacking Michelle Pfeiffer. He's already like shot all of her family's security guards.
Yeah.
And he like ran another guy down.
Yeah.
And
very unwerewolf things to do, by the way. He should just be like biting these people and killing them.
Well, werewolves like variety too.
Spice of life?
Yeah.
So he's like, it turns really rapey here. Like, he's.
Well, James Spader tries. Yeah.
Yes. In front of Jack Nicholson. And so Jack Nicholson is trying to like climb the bars to get out.
Yeah, but he can't quite. And he's wearing the amulet, which the guy told him would help him not become a werewolf. Because if he hasn't dealt with this by the full moon, the first full moon after he was bitten, he'll turn completely and that'll be it. So he, you know, seeing what's about to happen to Michelle Pfeiffer, he rips off the amulet and, like, wolfs out really hard and then manages to leap right up to the bars, and then they can do like a big old werewolf fight.
Yeah.
And this is where the action is.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And there's like a lot of like wire work here that looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say there's a pond fight, and yeah, it's fun.
Mm-hmm. But he's about to basically almost get killed until Michelle Pfeiffer takes the gun from the fallen security guard and shoots Stuart.
Yeah.
Dead.
Yeah, because he's not quite a werewolf yet, right? It's the moon has to do it.
Yeah.
So any bullets to the chest will do.
Well, this movie is agnostic on the silver bullet thing.
He gets shot 70 times by the six shooter and
yeah.
falls dead. And then Jack Nicholson and Michelle Pfeiffer
live happily ever after.
Yeah. She turns out that lycanthropy is an STD as well.
Yes.
So she gets to go into the woods with the contacts as well.
Yeah. And that is fucking Wolf. And I have a whole bunch of trivia and behind-the-scenes stuff. It's not footage. Right after this break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Next week on Rewatchability, we are going to be delving into Hellraiser.
Don't swear. Say Heckraiser.
I'm sorry. This is an explicit show. We should have stated that from the beginning. Heckraiser is going to be fun. I haven't seen it in a long time, but when I did, I was terrified as a kid.
Oh, my God.
Did you ever see Hellraiser?
No, but I have gotten acupuncture.
That is...
in my face.
Oh, my God. That's horrible. Well, hopefully it opened up your third eye. That would have been good.
It opens to something.
Well, we're going to try to, you know, bring back from the life that movie and really pick it apart, you know, tear the skin off of it and see if it still works.
And if you're into sadomasochism, that'll be exactly your thing.
So join us on Rewatchability for Hellraiser.
Heck. Welcome back to Rewatchability. We're talking about Wolf.
I mean, I hope we can finish the podcast before you fully turn into a wolf.
Well, the full moon is coming out, so we'll have to see.
So you have some trivia for me? Some behind-the-scenes stuff going on?
I thought you had the trivia.
What?
Ugh.
Oh, man, you're a bummer.
No, I have some some trivia for you. I can pull a few things out of my hat for this.
Great.
So, Blaine, this one is a little bit difficult for you. You have to think of three different things, three different entities.
I can't chew and walk.
So which three cast members of Wolf were in another supernatural movie entitled Witches of Eastwick?
Oh, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Okay.
Maybe Jack Nicholson.
Maybe?
Yeah, Jack Nicholson.
Okay.
And then the other cast member, that's hard. I'm going to say David Hyde Pierce.
You would be wrong.
No.
Sorry.
It
was, in fact, Richard Jenkins. You almost said it.
I'm such a dick. So Richard Jenkins, and I got the other two right?
Yeah.
Sweet.
But it's a three-part question, so you don't get any points. In fact, you lose points because that's how trivia works.
I try to design the questions so fairly for you. Okay, so those
You know
three
what's not fair? Being bitten by a werewolf.
Have you seen Witches of Eastwick?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
No, but yeah. Maybe we should watch it.
Yeah. It has three great actors in it.
Mm-hmm. And Jack Nicholson. No, he's amazing. I love Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson's awesome. It's just, in this movie, it's a little touch and go.
It's a little bit touch and go, but...
Yeah.
So the next question, blam, Which longtime collaborator of Mike Nichols did an uncredited rewrite on this script?
Oh, man. Elaine May. You got to go with Elaine May. She's Nichols and May, and she's also an amazing writer.
That is so correct.
Yes.
You got it.
Yeah.
Elaine May.
They're great.
They are great. You know, famously, they were a pioneering comedy duo.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they met after Mike Nichols thought that he saw her smiling at him at a play, and then he sat next to her on the subway and just started speaking to her in a Russian accent, and she started speaking back.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
And that's how they began.
That's awesome.
But
so they were riffing from the start.
They were riffing from the start. But they had like a legendary comedy partnership, and then they split up very shortly after they began, and while just having changed comedy forever.
Right.
And then also went on to change film forever as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You know, and this was the first collaboration of theirs in 35 years.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So like a long time had passed. Like they stopped hanging out in the 60s.
Damn.
Yeah.
Two talented people.
However, after this went so well for them, of course, they once again collaborated on Le Cage à Foie.
Oh, yeah.
The Birdcage.
Yep.
And Primary Colors.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's a great track record.
Yeah, and I think that they collaborated again on and off throughout till Mike Nichols sadly passed away a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But Elaine May has been doing some really interesting stuff. I think she's on Broadway right now, or was on Broadway doing a one-woman show.
Yeah.
And, of course, she's a great director as well.
She did
The Heartbreak Kid.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately for her, Ishtar.
So Ishtar is one of my favorite movies.
Well, one time we'll have to talk about it because it ruined her career.
It did ruin her career, and I think she was way like ahead of her time. Ishtar, it was like the litmus test of a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they called Waterworld Fishtar. That's how much Ishtar, and that's years and years later. That's how much Ishtar was in the general like consciousness of like bad movie.
Yep.
But I think without that movie, you have no Tenacious D. I think there's a lot of things in that movie that started
Okay.
Yeah. So we should talk about it. We should talk about like the worst movies that we love.
Okay.
At some point.
Okay. Question the third, Blaine. Which creative personnel from this film is related to Albert Einstein?
Oh, which creative personnel of this film was related to Albert Einstein? Fuck. Not the first red. I'm going to go with like some producer. I'm going to go with a producer.
Douglas Wick?
Sure.
That was the producer of this film.
Okay.
John Wick's dad.
And Albert Einstein's great grandson.
You're obviously wrong because you couldn't even really pick anybody.
Nope.
It is Mike Nichols, the director.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, he is third cousin twice removed of Albert Einstein.
Oh, that's dubious. Okay.
It's close enough. How close are you? Yeah, exactly.
Let me answer that. All right.
But, of course, like Mike Nichols' family came from Russia and Germany. They came to America after the Russian Revolution and after some bad stuff started happening in Germany. And Mike Nichols, he had a great career doing theater. He directed the original Odd Couple.
Yeah.
On Broadway.
Yeah.
And, of course, he started his film career with Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Oh,
and that's
so
probably
the wolf thing,
why
yeah.
he did this movie, because he was really disappointed that Virginia Woolf was not about werewolves.
My grandfather, who sadly passed away earlier this year, I was remembering all these stories about him, and he had this story about seeing Albert Einstein, because he worked in the Air Force, and he was walking down the hall one day, and this old man came by, kind of waddling down the hall, and then like 20 feet behind him, all these people with like notepads and everything, like a flurry of people just like kind of running behind this old man. And he was like, that's kind of weird. They were keeping their distance, but like really interested. And so he asked the other person said, that's fucking Einstein. That's the smartest man alive.
Yo, it's fucking Einstein.
I assume that's how like the army was run. Just like, oh, dude, you don't know this Einstein? Bro, Anyway, that's the story about Einstein. So
that's a good Einstein story.
So I'm not far removed from Einstein.
You're not far removed.
All right.
I also wanted to point this out, and this won't work out too well to the people who are listening to the podcast, but you can see this. There is also a little bit of a similarity in the poster of Wolf and the poster of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Oh.
So see, I'm showing it to Blaine. You got Elizabeth Taylor,
yeah,
who is the wolf.
Oh, yeah.
And you got Richard Burton over there. Black background, yellow writing. Okay.
Yeah.
And now look
That's
at this one.
That's a poster for Alf. Oh, yeah.
Even the word wolf, it looks like it's in a similar font. It's
yeah,
the same yellow color.
Yeah.
Black and white.
Yeah, I see that.
I wonder what other connections there are between Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and Wolf.
Is this your last trivia question?
No.
Okay.
No, the Einstein one was the third trivia question.
Okay.
You're
That's
done.
Cool.
You're done. Settle down, boy.
God.
Down, boy.
I just get so nervous about the trivia questions.
Well, I do have some behind-the-scenes stuff that we can talk about.
Okay. Was he really a wolf?
Yes.
Yes. See, I'm good at the behind-the-scenes.
Well, so this movie, it had a long development period. Jack Nicholson had been trying to make this movie for 12 years.
Jack Nicholson, eh?
Yeah.
That's so funny because he looks uncomfortable being the wolf. I don't know how to put it exactly. It's like a not full commitment to it or something. Maybe he's not able to. I don't know.
He seems a little too old for this shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he had the idea to do it 12 years ago, so at the time, it seemed like he would be able to pull it off.
I wonder if all the old man stuff was still in it the 12 years prior, and like whether he's just really old for it now.
Yeah, maybe.
There's a 22-year difference between him and Michelle Pfeiffer in this movie as love interests.
Honestly, I think that's not bad.
Who was the first writer? Woody Allen? What was this?
Well, don't invoke that name unless you want it to come back. So they had a hard time trying to get it made, but eventually Jack got Mike Nichols to do it. And Mike Nichols was having a lot of problems with the material, and it didn't seem like comfortable for him.
Yeah.
He's sort of more used to doing theatrical adaptations.
Yeah. Some comedy.
Some comedy, you know. But this sort of horror movie wasn't really in his wheelhouse. So he actually almost quit at one point.
Yeah.
And he called Jack Nicholson and was like, you know, don't make me do this. I'm not right. comfortable. It's not really – I don't know how to do this. But Jack Nicholson said, look, it's either going to be you or Stanley Kubrick who's going to get the movie done faster.
God, it was never going to be Stanley Kubrick.
No, in fact, he did ask Stanley Kubrick, and Stanley Kubrick did pass.
Yeah, no shit. I feel like it's just a little bit of a mess, like this movie. I feel like the script doesn't have enough in it that's different. Like I said, where's the concept? It's two different
things. It's about a guy turning into a werewolf.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not enough, I feel. There's no full – except for the stuff that we're putting on it. Like, I feel like other movies, like Interview with a Vampire, there is, like, this, like, homosexual undertone to it or overtone or tone. And for this, it feels like we're having to find the connections between the midlife crisis or it just feels like it wasn't – exactly drawn out of the material as fully as it could have been.
Well, I don't know
if there's
a
deeper lever. Deeper level to this.
I think it is a movie about the midlife crisis. I mean, we call it that's a derogatory term, but I mean, it's a movie about an old dude. And
right.
Mike Nichols has sort of said it as much himself. It's about the old person's revolution, he says.
Right.
You know, like it's the young guy who is like, you know, he thinks he's right. He's got all the youth and power, and he thinks that he should be able to own the world.
Right.
But, you know, Jack Nichols is not ready to step aside yet.
And that's why mandatory retirement ages are a good thing.
Yeah. But the
– I just feel like Cocoon did it better. I don't know.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
The screenwriter, Jim Harrison, he had a lot of problems working with Mike Nichols and with Michelle Pfeiffer. And he actually left the production because of creative differences with Nichols. And he says that...
Yeah, Nichols wanted to make it good. And he's like, I don't know. If I meet this guy, I have a lot of crow to eat.
Well, he's dead. So you will have eaten some crow or something.
Well, I'm
sorry. He's a somewhat successful writer. The same year that Wolf was released, they also released Legends of the Fall, which is based off his novella.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he was having a good year. However, he left the production because of creative differences with Mike Nichols, claiming, I wanted Dionysian. He wanted Apollonian. Mm-hmm. He took my wolf and made it into a chihuahua. I cracked up for 10 minutes and then went out into the country and stood in front of a wolf den and apologized while my dog hid under the truck. And then following his experience with the film, Harrison decided to leave Hollywood.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I mean, I can see that he wanted it to be more of a horror movie, more of a bloodbath. And that might have been a better movie, maybe?
It doesn't –
They might both have points. I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't really find the horror elements. Like, it has, obviously, the werewolf is a thing, but it doesn't try to scare. It doesn't try to, like, play with, like, the tension or, like, whatever the nerve-wracking agent of a horror movie is.
Yeah, there's not a lot of that. And it's too bad because Mike Nichols is so good at comedy, and horror really relies a lot on the comedy structure of scenes and of even jokes to be scary. So it could have been really great.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It wasn't Dionysian, if I could borrow. No, I don't
know. Oh, you want more wine and fucking, huh?
I mean, who doesn't, first of all?
Fair,
and
fair.
And then, I'm with you, I think. It just felt like it was in between something.
Yeah, I think it doesn't really find its tone. It doesn't quite know what it's trying to be. And I think it wants to be like a whole lot of things. Like it wants to be...
human, it wants to be wolf.
It's torn between these two worlds. Yeah.
Yeah.
So alternate casting. I only have one for you, but since you said the name, which should not be said in a podcast studio, I have to bring it up. Originally, the person playing Charlotte, Will's, Jack Nicholson's wife, was going to be Mia Farrow.
That's good. Yeah, that's cool. Okay.
But a little something happened around 1993, 94, where Woody Allen, and then there was like a lot of controversy, and then there was a trial.
Right.
And it seems like people are still talking about all this stuff today.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's basically why she had to drop out of the movie. She really wanted to do it. She offered to, like, take a huge salary cut because the studio wouldn't insure her.
Wow.
And she eventually had to drop out.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this feels like one of Michelle Pfeiffer's kind of first roles. Is it something where Michelle Pfeiffer kind of found her legs in Hollywood because of this movie, or?
I think that she had done stuff before.
Okay.
Like, some of her earliest roles are, like, as early as, like, the 80s and late 70s.
Oh, okay.
She was in Fantasy Island a couple times.
Right.
But she was in Grease 2 as Stephanie.
Right.
Yeah, she was in lots of stuff before that. And also Witches of Eastwick was... long before this. In fact, lots of her career was before this.
Great. So okay.
She'd already done Batman Returns.
Oh, yeah, fair.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Jack Nicholson had worked with Mike Nichols before in Carnal Knowledge, which was a movie from the 70s, which broke a lot of taboos. And also Heartburn, which is also about midlife crisis, I imagine.
Where are my Rolaids? I'm a Tums.
Yeah, and that's Wolf.
That's Wolf.
Blaine, I get the feeling that you were not fully transformed by this.
No, I would give it one full moon, you know?
That's all it takes.
That's all it takes. I wouldn't suggest this movie to people. I think there's like a bunch of other horror movies that have done Lycanthropy better. And with either the more blood or at least more intrigue to it. and better transformations. I found this was kind of early days for the special effects.
Well, you know who did all the special effects and makeup?
Who?
Rick Baker. You talking shit about Rick
Baker? Wow, Rick Baker. I'm sorry, Rick, but this isn't up to your... He set the bar, and then he didn't reach his own bar.
This movie cost $70 million to make, and I'm pretty sure that Roger Ebert was like, where did it go?
Yeah. They shot a whole night scene during the day, and it was so clear it was during the day. Mm-hmm. Like, you feel like if they had the money, they could at least shoot it at night.
Oh, yeah. That is night for day, for sure.
Yeah.
That, the deer scene.
The deer scene. It goes on for like 10 minutes, and it shows you the sun at some point.
It's always so weird. There's a scene in Deliverance that's like that, too, and it looks really bad.
So bad. I mean, we've gotten way better at it, but there's people suntanning in the background. Like, I just don't understand how they thought that would pass.
There were some other like major expenses on this movie. They had to do some reshoots, which actually delayed the release for 8 months.
Ooh.
And basically the whole thing was that scene where Jack Nicholson leaps on top of the cage.
Really?
Yeah. The studio just thought that they needed like a little bit more action to pull it all together.
I mean, the scene where he jumps onto the cage is the same shot over and over and over again of him jumping to the same spot on the cage and then not even falling off.
Yeah.
It looks like he can climb it. It's a very weird scene.
Mike Nichols called it a $1 million aspirin. He's good at jokes.
He's so good at jokes. Mike Nichols.
Yeah. So not rewatchable, Blaine?
I'm going to say not rewatchable.
I think
bites. What about you?
I sadly feel the same. I think it's just like a grand experiment that didn't sort of work out. It has so many really great elements, and I really love Mike Nichols directing and Jack Nicholson. And I think everybody tried their hardest, but it just doesn't really know what it wants to be. And I think that is even sort of felt by like some of the cast and like are going for different things, you know?
Yeah.
Like there seems to be disagreements about what this movie is actually about.
Yeah, it feels like they all got different invitations to different parties, but they all showed up to the same one. Like they showed up, but they weren't sure what to do and like how to interact with each other.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it just doesn't really seem to come together. It's very long and slow. There are some interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's some interesting scenes, some really like well-framed scenes. Some of it I do like. I do love the scene of Jack Nicholson chasing the deer for like 10 minutes.
It's long.
It is long. But I love just like the way that he's like moon running or something. It's kind of amazing.
Moon runner.
I'm also going to say not rewatchable.
Mm-hmm.
There was one more story that I wanted to mention before we wrap it up. Apparently, Jack Nicholson is allergic to spirit gum.
Ooh, that's not good. That affixes his sideburns to his face.
That is the thing that you use to, fake mustaches. Anything that you need to affix to your face, that's usually what you use. But and he told Rick Baker this at the beginning of the shoot, but apparently one day, he accidentally used the same stuff that he used on James Spader, and because nothing happened immediately, he didn't say anything. But then the next day, he went to Jack Nicholson's trailer, and he was like full of big red welts all over his face. And Nicholson said, "Ricky boy, you used the spirit gum, didn't you?"
Can you imagine him saying that to you? Be like, and I will immediately fire myself. I'll quit. Please don't murder me. In the trailer.
Yeah, apparently didn't happen again.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
God, he's an intimidating guy.
He's an intimidating guy. I mean, he used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, after seeing him spill homemade chili all over himself at courtside at a Lakers game, I can't take him the same way that I used to.
This is really hot.
So that's rewatchability for this week. You can tune in next week for another spooktacular Halloween haunt. Until then, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, where you can also rate us.
Yeah.
Out of 5 stars, only do 5. Else we will turn into a werewolf. But not in the good way like the doctor was. It'll be bad.
And you can haunt us on Facebook or, mm-hmm. or Twitter.
And yeah, you can follow us on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, you can stalk us all over the internet.
It sounds creepy already. You don't have to say it in a creepy way. And you can also go to our Patreon campaign if you want to support us that way, or go to TeePublic and order a T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And
spread the word.
Spread the word. Like linkropathy.
Linkropathy is how we spread links to our show. Thank you very much.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.